So a few reflections before moving on to questions, just a few more. An exploration about wise attitude, or about checking the attitude more, actually, about what it means to check the attitude, how often to do it, when we should do it. I've said often in the last few days that we should check the attitude from time to time, but I haven't really stressed that part of it in the guided meditation much yet. And I just want to re-emphasize the importance of it, why it's important, and that is because when we're observing experience, there are habits, patterns of mind, we could say filters through which we're knowing our experience, that are unseen to us, that we're not aware of. And so it's important to become aware of as much as possible within our meditation. So this practice of kind of checking in, it's checking in what is the relationship, can help to expose or pull into consciousness things that have been kind of behind the scenes or hidden, filters or views, agendas that have been hidden to us, and that they then come into conscious awareness. I said, I think yesterday, that when we notice an attitude, when we check the attitude and we notice, oh, there is, this expectation operating, or this wanting or desire, or this frustration, or this confusion, whatever we see, when we see that operating, it's not so much that we then like try to turn around and look at it or make that the focus of our attention. But rather, it's more like we have stepped back. We have seen, oh, there's something else in the mind, something that was maybe behind the scenes. And then the awareness gets a little bigger to include that it now knows that is happening. So it's aware there's the thing happening, and then there is the relationship to it. And just knowing that relationship is there, in a way, helps to take some of the power out of it. The attitudes that are the most, when the attitude is connected to greed, aversion, or delusion, that attitude is most dangerous for us when it's not seen. Because when it's not seen, then it's kind of it's leading us. That attitude of greed, aversion, or delusion is kind of the driver of the situation. And if we're not aware that that's happening, then we are unwittingly reinforcing or acting out or following through on the intentions that come with that attitude, that greed, aversion, or delusion. So it's important to check the attitude and see if there's something kind of behind the scenes. Sometimes, too, in checking the attitude, seeing that wise attitude is there. Wise attitude is behind the scenes. That maybe it hasn't been consciously recognized that wise attitude is there. The conscious recognition of those wholesome states of mind, of curiosity, of kindness, of interest, of equanimity, of compassion or metta, all of those are in the field and may be kind of highlighted for us as a flavor of wise attitude. And if we become aware that those attitudes are functioning, becoming aware of wholesome qualities has the effect of strengthening those wholesome qualities, of making it more likely that those wholesome qualities arise more in the future. Becoming aware of unwholesome qualities has the effect that it makes more likely for those to appear less in the future. So the very same kind of awareness brought to either the wholesome qualities or the unwholesome qualities has the effect of discouraging the unwholesome and increasing or encouraging the wholesome. So this is why it's important to actually be curious about checking the relationship. I've said to do it from time to time, and I'd say, you know, in a particular sitting, maybe, you know, every few minutes you could check the attitude. I find sometimes when I started this practice, I would kind of get a little bit vigorous in the checking of the attitude. I would notice, oh, this is the attitude, there's frustration. Well, what's the attitude about that? And what's the attitude about that? And what's the attitude about that? And it would be kind of like this very vigorous, infinite regress to keep checking the attitude back and back and back. And that got a little busy. And so I found it to be helpful to be a little more sparing in a way, especially initially with checking the attitude. And over time, the practice or the exploration of checking the attitude becomes more natural. It becomes more of something that the mind begins to naturally be curious about. It's observing something, there's curiosity about what it's observing, and then it's like, oh, and what's the attitude? Because the curiosity about the attitude has also been strengthened. There are some particularly good times to check the attitude. Anytime there is a sense of struggle in the meditation, if it feels like it's hard to meditate, or there's a resistance to being in the practice, anytime there's any kind of a sense of it's hard, that's a good time to check the attitude. There could be any of the flavors of attitude, a view or a belief happening in the background about what should be happening or shouldn't be happening that is kind of creating a sense of frustration there. It might be that the mind wants something to happen. And so whenever there's a struggle, if it feels like it's hard, you know, you're paying attention to something unpleasant and the mind is kind of thrashing around it, check the attitude. What is the relationship? There's kind of two aspects of the relationship. There's the curiosity about the relationship to the experience that's happening itself, and then there's the curiosity about what is the relationship to the meditation. So it may be that, you know, there's something happening in the experience. A lot of emotions, for instance. And the emotions themselves are pleasant. Maybe you're thinking about something and there's delight connected with those thoughts. And yet, so the content of it, of the experience, is those thoughts and that delight, that joy. And typically you would expect, you know, when something is pleasant, a relationship to that is often a wanting it. But because of the context in this case of practicing meditation, we might have a relationship with thoughts and the idea that I shouldn't be having those thoughts and the emotions that are coming with those thoughts. This is all extra. I shouldn't be having this. And so there's aversion. So the aversion is not to the content, but is more to the container or the agenda of the meditation. And so those are different, kind of different flavors of the attitude. And so if there's any kind of a struggle in the meditation, sometimes it might be that the attitude is connected to the content of what's happening, the experience of pain or frustration or the sound that's happening outside. You know, there's the barking dog and there's the frustration about the barking dog. That might be what the attitude is about. But it also might be that there's the attitude isn't so much about the what is happening, but that this is happening within the context of an agenda of meditation. And the attitude is about the agenda of meditation. So that's a slight distinction. Sometimes when we struggle in meditation, it's not so much about what's happening in the experience, but it's about our idea about what should be happening. So that's connected to the agenda of meditation. So anytime there's a struggle in the meditation, that can be a really useful time to check the attitude. And then I also mentioned this morning that it can be useful to check the attitude when thinking is happening. And also when we return from thinking, when we return from the mind wandering, that's a really good time to check in what is here in terms of relationship to experience. Because when the mind wanders, and I've said this several times, when the mind wanders, it can kind of construct, when the mind goes off into thinking, for instance, it can construct moods, emotions, it constructs a whole world. And if we are, coming back from that and not attentive to how the mind is as it returns, and maybe what the attitude in the mind is as it returns from thinking. And again, there's two levels here. There's the attitude, in this case, there could be the attitude about the fact that the mind has been thinking, which could be judgment or aversion. And then there's the attitude that might be constructed within the content of the thinking. So I mentioned that, maybe your mind had been thinking about an argument that you'd had or a contentious conversation you'd had with somebody. And then as the mind returns into awareness, that the emotions and feelings that are associated with the content of that conversation can also enter into the present moment and almost unwittingly be applied to the next moments of experience. And so if there's a frustration that has come in through the content of the thinking that's been happening, and then the next thing that arises is the sound of the lawnmower outside, it's possible that that frustration from the conversation may be then applied as an attitude to the sound of the lawnmower. And so it's useful to check in following, when the mind has wandered, what is the attitude upon the mind returning into mindfulness. And so that's two. When there's a difficulty or a struggle, checking the attitude. When we return from thinking, checking the attitude. And then also, when it feels like things are going really well, that's a good time to check the attitude. If it feels like there's a smooth flow to the experience, and that can sometimes, checking the attitude in that kind of a situation can sometimes reveal a subtle kind of leaning in to the experience, a kind of a wanting it to continue. That can be revealed in it, it's kind of like, ooh, I'm doing a good job. That kind of thing might be the attitude when there is, it feels like it's going well. So there can be a subtle kind of clinging or even, one time I noticed this, I was at Shui Umin and sitting in meditation, and that there was such, it felt so clear, it's so, so still and easeful in the mind. And in that space, it was continuing for quite a while. The wisdom arose, oh, check the attitude. It arose as kind of just like, oh, what's the attitude here with this experience? And there was a very subtle trying to make the experience continue. So a really subtle greed. When that fell away, that trying to make it continue, because just being seen, that part actually fell away. Underneath that was this fear that it would go away, that it would go away if I wasn't doing it. And so it revealed a kind of a subtler level of a kind of an aversive state in connection with this very still, quiet mind. And when I, you know, seeing this kind of the subtle kinds of attitudes that were at play, the next thing arose was kind of amazement and gratitude for seeing that, you know, it's like I had no idea that there was any kind of subtle clinging in that state or around that state until I checked the attitude. And so this can be, you know, useful, that sometimes we can see very subtle kinds, or even obvious. Sometimes it's really obvious, the clinging to these wholesome states, or when it's going well, it's like, oh yeah, you know, this is great. I'm doing this right. Finally, I've got it. I figured it out. So that can be more obvious form of the attitude in there. But also, sometimes when it's going well, what is available is wise attitude. And again, I mentioned earlier that when we become aware of wise attitude, you know, it's kind of like in that place where things are going well, how is the mind in relationship to that? What's going on? It's like there's okayness, perhaps, or there's the curiosity or interest, or maybe there's just boundless love or peace or calm. And again, the kind of connecting to know, these are the qualities, these are the wholesome qualities in the mind in relationship to this experience, will strengthen the those wholesome qualities. And so checking the attitude when things are going well can also help us to see the many flavors that are available with wise attitude. And it's not always going to feel like it might not always feel the same. Wise attitude can sometimes feel more like connected to the heart, love, compassion kind of qualities. Sometimes it feels more connected with wisdom, more interest and curiosity, or equanimity, balance, okayness. So, you know, there can be different flavors of the mind when there is wise attitude, and it's useful to know that, to recognize that. So that's probably enough for me on wise attitude. So I'll start with the question that I missed yesterday. So I'm going to paraphrase, I'm going to just read bits of it, shorten it. So I've been noticing recently a lot of tension in the body, especially since the shelter in place, and a kind of a tightening or holding along with that, that it's conditioned, especially when the mind goes off into thought. So, you know, when the mind kind of loses touch with mindfulness, it's like the habit, at least I'm seeing my internet connection's unstable. So, all right, can you hear me? Can you track what I'm saying? Okay. It sounds like especially when the mind is wandering, it goes into its habit of tightening or getting tense around just what's going on. As soon as, let's see, I feel pretty skilled at becoming aware, but forget. Even though, and so there's a kind of familiarity with being aware, and that feels very spacious, and it has a very allowing, a relaxed quality perhaps, more pleasant quality. And so there's that, there's a kind of the contrast. It's like the mind understands when awareness is present, the value of that. It touches into that in a very visceral way, it sounds like. And so the question is, even with that experience, the mind still reverts back to the tension. And the comment was almost like it's a refuge. So back and forth. So noticing that there's the tension, seeing it release, and then noticing the tension again. Just curious, basically, what's going on here? What am I holding on to? Why wouldn't the momentum behind the tension recede And why don't I abide in awareness more of the time? So this is this to me is a very familiar kind of experience, what's described. I'm very familiar with this kind of flavor of what happens, that yes, the there's tension that builds up when the mind wanders, or even in the present moment, when I am aware, sometimes it can build up, and then there can be a kind of a recognition, oh, there's tension building up, and it can release. The mind feels the release, it really appreciates that release, but as soon as the mindfulness weakens a little bit, or even within that mindfulness, the habit of the tension can come back. And some of this is just, this is deeply conditioned. These habits and patterns of mind are very deeply conditioned. The Buddha has said, whatever we frequently ponder becomes the inclination of the mind. And so we're kind of at this point beginning to more frequently ponder ease, release, spaciousness, awareness, curiosity. So we're more frequently pondering that, and it begins to perhaps strengthen that, the movement in that channel or that capacity. But there's also the very strongly conditioned habit of our habitual relationship with all experience, the ways in which from the time that we were born, and maybe even, you know, prior lifetimes, the habits have built up around, if there's something unpleasant, I need to tense around it and get rid of it. If there's something pleasant, I need to tense to hold on to it. So there's those patterns are very deeply ingrained in our system. And, you know, we might think that once or twice or even 100 or 1,000 times of experiencing that release and ease and peace of mindfulness, that it would, that the mind would kind of get it and say, yeah, I'm not going to do that other thing anymore. But it seems to take more than a few times. You know, it's, we have practiced tension, greed, and aversion for so many times that I actually don't think it takes as long to undo it as it did to build it up. At least that's the hope of, you know, what the Buddha taught. You know, he says we've been doing this for eons, and it is possible to become free of it. But at the same time, it's very strongly conditioned. The frustration or this should be ending by now. That itself is an attitude. You know, that is an attitude that's connected with the belief that, yeah, I've been doing this for a while, I've seen the value of this, so I shouldn't do that anymore. And so then there can be a little bit of resistance to, or a frustration about the fact that it reverts to its habitual patterns. So that itself actually continues to strengthen those habitual patterns. It's like we're subtly denying or almost invalidating their place in our minds. I sometimes think that we really need to honor our patterns and habits through awareness, not through following through on them, but to honor them through, yep, I see you, you are still happening, so let's hold this and be with it, you know, see what's here. And something that came up in the group earlier today, there can be something that happens for us in meditation where we gain a skill in that letting go, with the mind returning to awareness and recognizing, oh, this tightness here, this is not necessary, and I know how to let go. And there's a way in which we can kind of do a releasing of that pattern. And this, I've done a lot of this, and this can be valuable over time. It's like we see, oh, that's not so helpful. Let me step back into that place where I know I can be at ease and at peace. There can be in that stepping back that a subtle kind of preferencing or almost a leaning towards the ease and peace, not simply a kind of an equanimous opening to ease and peace. It's a kind of a preferring that state of mind. And so that preference in a very subtle way kind of represses or negates in some ways that pattern or habit that we're letting go of. It's somehow saying, almost saying to that pattern, you're not as valuable as this ease and peace. So that kind of gives it a little bit of a denial almost, just in a very subtle way. And so that can actually keep that pattern kind of locked in almost, or it can keep it coming back. And so something that I have seen in my own practice is that there can be a way, to kind of see something arising, some habit or pattern arising, and then noticing that there's awareness of it and recognizing, oh, there's this tendency to go back to, to let it go, to kind of do the letting go of that pattern and watch it all smooth out again. And instead kind of rather than doing the letting go, just being willing to hover with the experience of being aware with that experience, being aware with that whatever that constriction is that's arisen. And then in the holding of it, when that is held with wise attitude and there's not an impatience and not an aversion, but it's just, oh, that's what's happening, kind of that sense of willingness to be with, then what can happen is that this pattern may have some momentum, kind of a little bit of momentum that continues. But because the attitude is more holding it with a space of neutrality, it's like we've put the pattern into neutral and it will eventually release. And so instead of like doing the release with a kind of a conscious intention, it's more like with that holding of the pattern, so we see the tension. For instance, in this case, the question is around seeing the tension of the body and mind. If what's happening is the awareness returning, and there's a little bit of like, oh, I know how to release this, just that, again, that subtle preferring the release, then it may just keep coming back. That pattern may just keep coming back. And what I've seen is that if I watch that pattern of tension arise, and then there's the awareness, oh, there's that tension, then what I can experience is the tension releasing itself. And then it may come back again, and then it can release itself again. This seems to have a different conditioning effect on the mind than the doing of the letting go, the doing of the releasing. When the pattern releases itself, it's like the mind is, the wisdom is allowing it, the wisdom in the mind is understanding this is a kind of a tension, it's a contraction, and it's a suffering, and it's like the system is understanding how to let that go. So the that's another exploration at a subtler level that can happen around this kind of noticing the difference between being aware and it being peaceful, and noticing these habits of tension or any kind of conditioned habit returning. So I want to stop there and just check in and see if there's any comments or questions about what I've said. I'm still adjusting. I have to honestly say I'm still adjusting to teaching to the computer. I find my mind is not quite as facile. It's not quite as, it doesn't quite remember everything it wants to say. And it feels like it's struggling a little bit to find the words. So just check in and see, are there any kind of comments or questions about that piece of it, or was it clear? So notice the frustration, you know, that's the attitude. And again, that frustration is, I mean, some of it is connected with the content of that pattern, but some of it is connected with the idea that it should be gone by now, that the meditation should have done something to it by now. So it's connected not only with the pattern itself, but with the agenda and our ideas about the meditation. And that part is, you know, the ideas and agenda about the meditation, you know, that part is in the realm of delusion. You know, the delusion is often experienced. I mean, sometimes delusion is experienced as a kind of a disconnect or a kind of a spacing out or a not being really clear about what's going on. Sometimes that's the way delusion feels. But I'd say more often we can be really clear about what's happening and have no idea that we have some kind of belief in our minds about what's going on. And that belief is influencing how we're receiving, how we're taking in our experience. And so delusion is, as Sayadaw Utejaniya says, delusion doesn't mask the object. It masks the nature of the object. It masks that it's impermanent. It masks that it's unreliable. It masks that it's uncontrollable. It masks that it's not self. And so the idea of I should be in control or my meditation should have this result, that's a kind of a delusional belief. We don't get to say how our meditation unfolds. So sometimes a way in. Oh, here's another reflection on attitude, actually, in terms of checking in. You know, what's the relationship to experience? There's a couple of more specific questions. You could check in. What's being believed right now, especially if it doesn't feel like there's particularly greed or aversion? You know, is there a belief happening right now, or what's being believed right now? There's almost always some kind of belief operating, and so you might be able to make that belief more conscious or more available by checking in to the attitude from that particular perspective. What's being believed right now? And often beliefs are delusions that are, beliefs are functioning as delusion in the mind because we are not aware of the belief. We are just taking it to be truth. It's like this, you know, when we believe something, it's just the way it should be. And if that belief is exposed as belief, then we can at least begin to see that it is a belief. It's not a truth. Or may not be a truth. Maybe we can also see, well, there's this belief, and yeah, I'm signed on board to that one. I really believe that belief. So we might be able to recognize the kind of the gradations of how strongly the belief is held. Sometimes we might see a particular belief in the mind. We might see that this belief is there, and having it be exposed, we can just be like, wow, that belief is ridiculous. I don't even believe that. But it was functioning in the mind as if I did believe it. So that's another a kind of way into to checking the attitude. So other comments, and I, there's one more question from the sheet, that the questions that you submitted online, but just to check in again if there's anything that coming from live questions right now. Okay, so the second question I think this time I'll just read it. It's a little long, but it seems easier to read it than to try to paraphrase it on the fly. I've been practicing with the instruction to notice what has been conditioned during times away from mindfulness. So that's what I've been describing, you know, notice what's been shaped while the mind has been wandering. Sometimes I come back with a new mind state where it feels like the mind has gone into habitual unskillful patterns, while other time the mind wakes up into calmer, happier, more peaceful place. With the latter, there can be a sense that something has settled or been worked out outside of the watchful mind. But I also have a belief from practice that one must be present for genuine positive changes to occur in the mind, and hence that returning with greater peace is more the result of chance. That is, my mind has simply gone into a habitual, skillful way of operating. So the question is, can genuine letting go happen outside the type of mindfulness that's cultivated in this practice? I suspect that certain states of concentration or an awareness that doesn't include a reflexive component might be examples of this. So, I'll start by just saying, yes, it is possible for genuine transformation to happen when we're not looking. An example I had of this, and I've told this story before, so some of you have heard this before, some of you have heard this many times. I was exploring and working with the pattern of anger, and you know, as I noticed it, you know, I worked with it for quite a long time, several years. It was anger about a particular situation with a particular person. And I would notice that it arose and I'd pay attention to it. And then at a certain point, I began seeing that trying to pay attention to that anger was actually kind of taking me down the rabbit hole of anger. And so I began instead, for a long stretch of time, instead of trying to be mindful of that anger, when it arose, I would acknowledge it. Yep, I see you. And yeah, I can't be with you right now. So I would kind of acknowledge it and then set it aside. And then I would often, for some reason, I would often be walking when these thoughts arose. And so I would kind of acknowledge this with a gentle kind of, yeah, I see you. And my mindfulness isn't strong enough to meet you right now, so I'll get back to you, and you can take a walk with me, but I'm going to put my attention on my feet. And so I redirected in a very gentle, compassionate way. I redirected the attention away from the anger and towards something else. And then, you know, it would recede, the anger would recede. And, you know, some days or hours later, it would come back and I would do the same thing. Over and over again, I did that. Over and over again. And then one time, months into this, using this as the way I related to this practice, as related to this experience of the anger arising, you know, I began to see actually that it was not happening as much, you know. It's like, oh, there's that anger again. Wow, oh, it's been a couple weeks since I experienced it. But, oh, there it is again. Okay, not now. And, you know, just put it aside. And just kept going. And then, so each time it came up, I didn't ever, like, sit down and try to find it or look for it or work with it. I would just notice it when it arose and then set it aside. And then one day when I was walking back into my house, I recognized that I hadn't experienced that anger, and I couldn't remember how long. And I'd kind of noticed it getting further apart, but you know, and I, the last time it had happened, I'd noticed, oh, yep, there it is again. Okay, set it aside. And then and then I noticed this one time, it's like, wow, I haven't experienced that in a really long time. And even remembering it in that moment, I couldn't call it up. I could not even, like, imagine or construct or go to that anger around that person. Because, you know, thinking or realizing, oh, wow, I haven't experienced that anger in a while, brought into mind the situation, brought into mind the person around the anger. And there was no anger. It was almost shocking. It's like, what happened to it? It's gone. And I didn't trust it. I didn't trust that it was actually gone. But it was gone. It never returned since then, since that moment. And that was kind of amazing to me, because I had sort of assumed, similar to the way the question was asked, I'd sort of assumed that, you know, I was saying to that anger, you know, I'll get back to you when my mindfulness gets stronger. I'll get back to you. We'll work on this. And I never had to do that. It disappeared when I wasn't looking. And it seems to be not a letting go of that is related to, a concentration or something like that. It was a genuine release of something. I never saw what was actually released. I never understood how the mind really constructed that anger. I never, I knew that it was there, but I never saw how that pattern was unfolding. And prior to that, most of my insights had been through clearly seeing the unfolding of a pattern and a kind of seeing the empty nature of that. Oh, this is just a pattern arising. And that there was a freedom with that. I've talked sometimes about an insight into my experience of self-hatred, and that's how that one kind of really began to fall apart, was seeing the arising of the self-hatred as just a thought in the mind that was believed. And, you know, that belief was just the mind's doing. It had no inherent reality. And so that was seeing something actually in the moment unfolding that allowed the mind to let it go. I have no idea what the mind let go of when it let go of this anger. But I do know that I can think about that situation and there is no sense of, you know, the revisiting of that anger. So something let go, and it was pretty deep kind of letting go, because it was an anger that lasted at least a couple years. It was a very strong, long-lasting anger. And so that really gave me the sense or the confidence that there is letting go work that can happen. And I think partly because we are cultivating. So, in the question it mentioned, my mind has gone off into a habitual, skillful way of operating without being consciously aware of it. Yes, we are cultivating a habitually skillful way of being with our experience. And even if we are not aware of it, those skillful patterns can be, those skillful conditioned patterns can be helping the mind to let go. So that's my sense. That's my experience with my own practice, that yes, it is possible for the mind to let go. And sometimes in that place that talking about when the mind returns from wandering and it's more settled, what I've seen in that situation is very often, at least in my case, that when I look at what was going on before the mind wandered, there was often a little bit of extra tension in the meditation. And it's kind of like the mind was saying, hey, you know, you're caught in this unskillful habit. Let me show you. No, I'll show you how to do this. And because my mind had been so engaged in the doing of this, like, I'm going to do the meditation, it didn't notice that the mind was kind of, you know, slipping into a letting go. And it would wander with that letting go. It was like orienting towards something a little more easeful and peaceful. And it would, you know, in that shift to orienting towards more ease and peace, the mindfulness would get lost. And that can sometimes happen because in that shift to a more released state, it's a subtler experience than our conscious mind really knows how to connect to. And so sometimes it's what the experience has felt like to me is that the mind through cultivating this wholesomeness, you know, cultivating the habit of wholesomeness, the mind begins to gravitate towards wholesomeness, even if we can't consciously follow it. And so when we wake up into awareness again, sometimes it's as if the mind has shown us a kind of a letting go that's possible that we didn't have kind of conscious awareness of the possibility of it. So that's my sense of what's going on there. And I definitely know from my own experience that it's possible for the mind to let go of something while we're not looking, and that it can be a very deep kind of release that has some wisdom. Even if I can't articulate that wisdom, even if I can't say what was released in that situation, it was wisdom. And maybe it's just as simple as the mind recognizing, yeah, that pattern is suffering. We don't go there. You know, it could just be as simple as that. So our time is up for the afternoon.